SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From the Event Center at Bally's, Las Vegas, a good Wednesday morning, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. And for those that ultimately will be sitting right in front of me here in the ballroom, listening in person, I guess that's an option. A very good morning from Vegas, and I don't know. I kind of feel like I got off the air yesterday, and it feels like basically was traveling for 21 hours. Not a problematic trip at all, but just late. The only way to get here from Albany, there used to be. You know, like a late afternoon flight that would get you in, you know, 10 o'clock, maybe 10:30 here. But that option is over. And so I didn't leave till 6:30. And I'll tell you one thing. I don't know if this was just a you know, Tuesday element of travel, but it was. I mean, it was like Station 11 quiet. I got to Chicago. I checked to see if I was in Severn City. I tell you, there were 30 people on the flight from Chicago to Las Vegas. 30. And there was 40 from Albany to Chicago. Very strange. And they one of the things when you're in a big plane and there's that few people, they make that announcement, you know, please spread out throughout the, you know, throughout the aircraft, you know, for weight distribution. And whenever they do that, it makes me think of a flight from Logan to, I think to Keene, New Hampshire, on Pilgrim. Remember Pilgrim? One of the few airlines that had, I think, two planes go down in the same week. Pilgrim. I don't know why. Why am I laughing? I got to the counter, and the gate agent says, "How much do you weigh?" I said, and this goes back to the 80s, probably. Who was I working for? I was working for Procter. And, so I probably weighed 160 pounds. And I said, 160? Why? She goes, okay, well, we need you to sit on the right side. I mean, they literally spread us out. So that was my first experience with weight distribution. That flight also, famously, there were three of us in the plane, and one on each side and one in the back row, so that, you know, to keep the thing level. And then there was a pilot and a co-pilot, and we got to New Hampshire, and I'm getting off, and the other two are going on. I think it was going up to Maine, maybe, and or to Burlington. And the co-pilot takes the logbook, slams it down, and says, "You can go on. Nothing works in this damn plane." I swear to God. I looked at the other two guys. I said, "Well, best of luck, boys." And I'm getting out. This is my stop. That's a true story. Unbelievable. That's just funny what triggers in your head. Okay, now that I've whiled away 3 minutes with my frivolous life history, happy to be here, excited, and a little punchy. To be honest, I didn't. I'm not a sleeper on a plane. I'm not. There was. Well, I was getting off. Actually, there was one guy that was still asleep, and I didn't. It didn't. Everybody's filing out, and the guy's absolutely still out. He's head against the side of the plane. I don't know how anybody does that. So I'm operating on about 3 hours, but feel good and excitement here, I think, is pretty widespread, and there's a lot of people apparently that are either arrived last night or are arriving today. And of course, as we talked with Keith Shamblin yesterday, and there was widespread acclamation for the honorees for the NHC Hall of Fame. And we're going to talk to Paul Matisse this hour. Stanley Bavelish is in the hotel, so there's a good chance I'll have a face-to-face with Stanley. I know Trey Stiles is here. Trey got in early. And who else did I hear that... Roger Satina. I'm surprised. If Roger was here, he'd be in the ballroom waiting here, because usually he's one of the first meet and greets. But a lot of excitement building to tomorrow's last chance, first chance. And in fact, I don't know if it was. I should have put this up on the intranet. But the mandatories tomorrow. For those that are traveling and are on their way here and listening and looking forward, Gulfstream 6th tomorrow, Aqueduct 6th, Aqueduct 8th, Fairgrounds 8th. So 6th at Gulfstream and Aqueduct, 8th at Aqueduct and Fairgrounds, and the contest tracks tomorrow for the last chance, first chance, Aqueduct, Fairgrounds, obviously, Gulfstream, and Laurel. So check the weather, for those of you that have affection for the turf racing, see what those cards look like at Fairgrounds and Gulfstream. See if you can't get a couple of turf events into your optionals. And Keith apparently he didn't do much sleeping, because when I came down at 5:30, he was working already. So we'll see what else he can tell us. In fact, actually, I know that Keith is going to visit at the top of hour three. The NTRA and the Eclipse Award team will announce the recipient of this year's Award of Merit. Always a wonderful distinction to individuals of all different ilk, actually, when it comes to the game. There's been, you know, merit recognition for virtually every capacity. And of course, one of the ones closest to everybody's heart among the horse playing community, when Steve Crist and Andy Beyer were about the greatest entry ever in industry recognition. So we'll check in as the morning unfolds with Keith. When it comes to the racing, of course, getting excited about the weekend and big cards, of course, at Gulfstream with the Pegasus and its sundry supporting stakes, and more than that, there's maiden action too, and in fact, there's a good aside about the maiden action. Oaklawn, of course, with the Southwest. We haven't talked yet about the draws at Oaklawn, and Sam Houston, of course, got out ahead of things. Speaking of Trey Stiles, they got out ahead of things as well, and have the Ladies Classic card on Sunday. And for those that I suppose there's a chance we could visit with Nick, but I you know, with the passing of his father, he's going to be off tomorrow and Friday, and I'll let him when he's able to join us, which, you know, I suppose with the show doing the show from here on Sunday. Maybe we talk to Nick on Sunday, but he's planning to call, of course, the big card on Sunday and Saturday as well. So don't know if we'll talk to Nick ahead of the Ladies Classic card, but the Connolly and the Ladies Classic and the rest of that nice Sunday action. And I am curious, actually, if it's a good question, if Sam Houston is going to be utilized as part of the contest. I can't remember that it has before. The opportunity, of course, to feature Fairgrounds is a plus. You know, after this period of loggerheads between Churchill and the Las Vegas Signal distribution entity, but with that resolved, and that came at the beginning of December, that opens up Fairgrounds to contest play. So, and obviously, using it tomorrow for the first chance, last chance, last chance, first chance. So that'll be part of the mandatories, and of course lots of play along opportunity for everybody heading into Saturday. And we'll get into that as the week. We're great. Good to see you, the IT guy. And thanks to them, they had everything laid out for me. Let's lay out, actually, while we got a minute, and get a glance ahead to Saturday at Gulfstream and what happened with that draw. And of course, Andy with his mirthful treatment of the. What he continues to identify as the Don handicap. The field obviously took a notable turn immediately with Nixco drawing the rail, and not that his style was going to be evaluated into the race, but there's only one thing to do now, and that, of course, is to go. And Life Is Good drew the four hole. In between them are Chess Chief and Stiletto Boy. And so from a confrontation standpoint, it'll be pretty instantaneous. I mean, two or three jumps out, Nixco and Life Is Good are going to at least be shoulder to shoulder for some strides, but it just seems impossible that Life Is Good isn't to the lead into that turn. And of course the turn comes up quickly, going the mile and an eighth at Gulfstream. So it just feels like Nixco is highly compromised in this initial interpretation. Give it a quick rundown. Nixco, Joel Rosario, Chess Chief in from that tenacious win at Fairgrounds for Dallas Stewart and the estate of James Coleman, the Into Mischief 6-year-old. And, to be honest, as we've mentioned before, he is a graded stake winner and a grade one placing, being a son of Into Mischief, a grade one placing would be of tremendous value to Chess Chief and his long-term marketing interests as a stallion. Out of a mineshaft mare, I mean, there's plenty to recommend Chess Chief as a stallion prospect. Stiletto Boy from the three-hole for the Mogers, and the Shackelford Gelding coming out of the Malibu, a distant third to Flightline and Baby Yoda. Life Is Good, Kentus Ormo for Stiletto Boy. Life Is Good, IRAD,
for Windstar and China Horse. Empty Tomb, who bypassed the race in New York for this. You know, he's a horse that likes to be forward. He's no better than third early. So it just seems like I don't know. You get Paco, so he'll be aggressive. Does he add to the pace? How long can he? He can't stay with Nixco and Life Is Good for too long. Sir Winston from the six and coming out of that Valedictory win, and of course, you know, kind of a long-winded type, and you know, for all of the kidding that the Belmont winner takes, he's strung together four really nice performances since he came back as a five-year-old. Last August, won an allowance, was second in the Durham, was second in the Autumn, then won the Valedictory. So he's been running okay. You know, seems like you know, yet another of the candidates to pick up a piece late. Dallas Stewart with his second player in here, title ready for Mr. Fipke, the seven-year-old, more than ready. Endorsed for Mike Maker and Mark Breen with Umberto Rispoli. And Commandeer, Jimmy Toner, jumps in for the AJ Suited Racing Stable. The Street Boss four-year-old making a stakes debut in this spot. And he does seem to be forward-going, four-year-old gelding. So there's your nine-horse field. For Pegasus, and goes off at 5:34 on Saturday, and that'll be right into the teeth of a moving day Saturday at here at Bally's. It should be, I would think, some of the stakes will be part of the mandatories. The turf, the Pegasus turf, got a big, bulky field of familiar horses, and the presence of Colonel Liam and the question of his readiness in this spot. But coming back, and of course, last seen in the Manhattan last June, and so kind of a big ask to bring him back. I mean, he's had a nice, steady series of prep for this, but I don't know. Feels like a into the fire scenario. You don't have to worry about Todd though, if if Colonel Liam isn't ready to fire for the lows and for Irad, you know, right off the bench. Never Surprised is in here. Drew Outside and is gonna have to be used early to get position because Channel Cat is in this race for Jack Sisterson. He wants to go. So there'll be some jostling. Doswell for Barkley Tag and Joe Allen, the homebred 7-year-old, the one the Fort Lauderdale on the front end. So there's some pace and you know they're going to be jostling for position into the turn. Quick rundown: Brendan Walsh has got Space Traveler. Drew the Rail is going to save ground for his late run, you would think. Jamie Spencer. Riding, and I don't think Spencer. No, Spencer. Danny Tudhope used to ride him in the UK in his prior life, and also yeah, Tudhope, Schumark, Lee. Now he's now six Space Traveler. And in North America for good, the Mr. D, the Woodbine Mile, the Keeneland Mile, and then the Fort Lauderdale. Atone, Jordan Wyckoff and Mike Maker, second to Doswell in the Fort Lauderdale. Flavius, that is now in the hands of Mike Maker. And the Michael Ivarone and Partners group. You'll see the familiar white jacket, the big brown jacket. March to the Arch for Mrs. Weber. Mark Cassie from the four-hole. making his 7-year-old debut, Hit the Road comes west for Dan Blacker. And DK Racing and Radley Equine and Company. Tyler Gaffleone picks up the mount here. Then Colonel Liam, that Doswell has mentioned. Sacred Life for Chad. Michael Dubb and partners, Matticat, etc. Field Pass, Maker. You can't run these races without a phalanx of Maker runners. Field Pass in here with Umberto Rispoli coming out of the Seabiscuit win. Channel Cat, as mentioned, Joel Rosario back aboard. He rode him in the Pan Am back in March of 2020. Cross Border, the third of the Maker entities, of course, another veteran. He's making his 8-year-old debut. And Never Surprised, as mentioned, from the outside with Luis Saez, never worse than second, as the wins have piled up for Never Surprised. 4 wins, 3 seconds, and always competitive. But it feels like there's no shortage of pace challenge for anybody that is going to go to the front end in that Pegasus turf. So those are the two big features. As Andy was mentioning, there's this new filly and mare turf that they fashioned. It seems like a decent enough set. The Fred Hooper, presented by Hillendale, the one turn mile event. That Pegasus filly and mare, Regal Glory, and one of our favorites, Regal Glory, certainly the centerpiece in there. But Sweet Melania for Todd and the Lowe's. First time North America for Gary Barber and Team Valor. Bill Mott takes over Wakanaka, a power 4-year-old. Lady Spite Spear for Atfield and Mr. Fipke, the homebred Spitestown out of Lady Shakespeare. Regal Glory, Paul Pompa bred Animal Kingdom mare that has amassed $1.2 million in earnings, 9 wins, and last, of course, winning the Matriarch in November. Gift list for Brian Lynch and the Ammermans. Godolphin, Alms, Stidham, Rosario. Michael McCarthy ships nicest out of that American Oaks placement. She's actually run very well her 3 North America visits. This is an American Pharoah filly for Mr. Yoshida. And came over, was 4th in the Queenie 2 while Donica O'Brien was still training, and now the 2 starts under McCarthy's care. Just missed to Neige Blanche in the red carpet ahead of the American Oaks placement. Summer in Saratoga, who bypassed the opportunity at Fairgrounds for Joe Sharp and company. Corey Lannery riding, and of course finished the year very well, winning the Dowager. And then the blushing KD down at Fairgrounds. Shifty She, and this is a nice story, Shifty She and the Pedigree partners that are just so thrilled to, you know, have a mare like this. And she was 2nd in the Sewanee, but she had won the Noble Damsel and has kept very good company. Won the Ginger Punch, clearly likes this course. 4 wins in 7 tries at Gulfstream. Gonzalez stays. Castellano for Shug and Stu Janney in a hurry. The Blame Mare. Bipartisanship, Graham Motion. So, nice field for the new filly and mare turf. One non-stake that while I was traveling, and I should go back and look and see who it was, but somebody said, hey, Shug's got a first-time starter. This is also Stu Janney. A Blame Colt out of Gloaming, the Malibu Moon Mare of Janney's, debuting at 7 furlongs. This has always been one of our favorite angles. So I gotta go back and see who was it that alerted. Oh, it's Tyler Wisman that I think that it's definitely Tyler that alerted me Thank you, Ty. Because I did not get to Keith just printed the Gulfstream PPs for me. So I had only seen the overnight. So we'll get to work later today on all the weekend stuff, because we'll have plenty opportunity tomorrow and Friday to do the handicapping. Didn't mention what came together at Oaklawn either yesterday. And you got, I think I saw seven of the Smarty Jones participants are back for the Southwest. Not unusual, but what is interesting is that, you know, there were 13 horses in that Smarty Jones, and the sort of the reshuffling of the deck, including Ben Diesel, the Dallas Stewart, Willis Horton will take charge goal, the homebred for Mr. Horton. That could make a huge difference, you would think, drawing the rail. So Ben Diesel and John Court move inside, and, you know, basically were hustled to get early position, and it took a little bit of a toll, given the quickish pace. So Ben Diesel may want to go right back there for those that were turned away at 9-2 in the Smarty Jones. Dash Attack, of course, your Smarty Jones winner, back in here for McPeak and Davey Cohen. And in fact, the top four finishers from the Smarty are signed on. Dash Attack, Barber Road, Ignitus, etc. Dash Attack drew the two. Don't Cross the Devil for Phil D'Amato, who came from California, but is stationed at Oaklawn. And Ramon Vasquez gets aboard. He was never involved, essentially, in the Smarty Jones. Cavad, who was fourth for Chris Hartman in the Smarty. Costa Terra makes a three-year-old debut. The Gunrunner Colt for Steve Asmussen and Winchell Homebred out of Teardrop. Osborne back out of the Springboard Mile, where he was second for Ron Moquette. David Cabrera gets aboard. Ignitus, that we mentioned, was a good, steady closing third in the Smarty for Wayne Lucas and Holy Cow Stables. Barber Road, that we talked about with John Ortiz the other day, second in the Smarty, second in the Lively Shively. Classic Moment out of the Springboard Mile for Asmussen. LNN, the Lee Levinson, and the Winchell. This is a Team Valor bred $350,000 Keeneland yearling. Newgrange comes for Baffert. We'll talk about Baffert in a minute. The SF Starlight Matticat Bunch, the Violence Colt. That is 2-for-2. Won the Sham on New Year's Day in his stakes debut, beating stablemate Rockefeller, and did it nicely. Call Me Jamal for Michael Pewich, maiden winner in mid-December for Mark D. Domenico. This was a Malibu Moon gelding out of the nice Jeremiah Rain, and Vivar for Brad Cox, and for John Ed Anthony, homebred short leaf Cairo Prince Colt, who was fifth in the Smarty Jones after a exceedingly wide trip. Florent Giroux picks up the mount in here. So there's your Southwest on Saturday as well, and the King Cotton, the sprint race. And in fact, John Ortiz, I think one horse that slipped through the cracks with John. Did we ever talk about Hollis with John? I don't think we did. Yeah. So, Hollis drew the rail for the King Cotton. And, I mean, he's you know, he's had stake tries before, but, you know, coming off that just explosive allowance win the second weekend of Oaklawn. Long Range Toddy in there as well. This is a good group. Nashville for Asmussen, who was, you know, the victim essentially of Hollis in that allowance at the end of the year. Boldore, how old is he now? 6 years old now for Ed and Susie Orr. Steve Asmussen, six-time winner, Seven Nation Army for Moquette as well in here. It's a good it's a double crown for Amos coming over from Fairgrounds. Collusion Illusion for Glad comes in from Santa Anita. And Bob's Edge for Larry Jones. And home base for Cipriano Contreras. And Long Range Toddy, who is six and feels like he's been around forever. Right? Isn't that one of those horses that feels been forever? Pretty funny. All right. Let me turn our attention to our first conversation this morning, and it's going to be with Paul Matisse. And okay, he's actually here. He's got a different number for you to use. There you go. We're going to have our congratulatory visit with Paul, and you know, in some cases we know of tournament regulars, contest regulars that aren't going to be here. Others, you know, you'll realize at some point, or you might hear from somebody that that they aren't coming, and somebody will say. You'll ask him, where's so-and-so? We heard, got word yesterday during the show, actually, John Nichols sent a note, Clocker John. And John is going to bypass the trip, made the decision. Can understand. John's got one lung. So you do everything you can when you have one of something that you're supposed to have two of. You're a little more careful than so I don't blame John at all under the circumstances, but we'll miss him here because it's always fun. He does love coming. He'll be watching from afar, and we'll probably check in with John. And of course, as I'm talking about those who can't be here, that includes new Hall of Famer. It was only a question of when, not if. Paul Matisse joins us. Paul, congratulations.
Thanks, Steve. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm here. I'm in Vegas, and certainly gonna miss you and John too. I mean, that table, that's a big dent in the fender of that table.
Yeah, I didn't know that John wasn't coming.
Oh. Yeah, he made the decision yesterday.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So. Who can we expect from? Duke qualified, yes.
Yeah, Duke's double qualified, and my nephew Carson's going to be there. Of course, Marvin will be there. He'll be running around.
That's all that matters, actually. No one really cares about the players as long as bet runner Marv is on the scene. Paul, we'll talk first about this distinction. I had David Goodfriend yesterday and Michael Bacek, and today you and Stanley. But just your feeling, hearing that that your contemporaries had elected you into this Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's the best part. That's it wasn't the writers like you and like in baseball. Wouldn't have to deal with you asshole writers. But I actually probably my credentials are a little light in the NHC. I did win the consolation tournament as well as the NHC, but I wanted to do a little bit more before I ever got elected into the Hall of Fame. And also, more importantly, the three guys that are going in, actually all four, late Randy Gallo and the other three guys. I was thinking about it yesterday. When Stanley won the NHC and he got all those commercials and he became kind of like a mini rock star, I said, wow, this NHC is getting to really be big. And then Maven, when he was doing the TV spots and interviewing us during when we're making bets. It just was the evolution of the NHC and how bigger it got. The guys that were at the forefront were Stanley and David, and then at the end, you know, kind of like hit the point when Michael Bacak won the $1 million first prize. That seems like that was when it really became huge, and you know, there was videos of them on cell phones and stuff, and it just seemed like they're the three right guys to get in. They were, you know, hopefully I followed in their footsteps and promoted the NHC one after I won, but you know, I felt like those three guys were, you know, before me and more important. So I was actually more happy that all three of those guys got in. You know, there's a couple guys that you know, like you said earlier, I mean, like Jose and my brother Duke, you know, behind me, who were just a matter of time before they get in. But, you know, I feel like I'm more in that category with those two guys. Like, but it's pretty cool to be elected with those guys, because they were instrumental in the NHC growth.
And there's two parts of that, actually, Paul, that intrigue me. How quickly as the contest landscape emerged, you know, going back to those earliest contests like Dave talked about, and you know, we hear reference to the Penn National, you know, the early Penn National contest, and you know, I know, well, of course, Chick with the Orleans, right? He won an Orleans World Series, but
yep.
when did you wade into it?
Well, it's funny, actually. You know, the one year was one of the tournaments at the Orleans was the same weekend as the NHC, and I think it was across the street there. They had the contest, so I stayed at Bally's, and I accidentally ran into Noel Michaels and Stephen Crist and everybody in the Bally's, and I was wondering what they were doing there. I hadn't even heard of the NHC at that point. And we were there, you know, playing the Orleans contest on the same exact days. And that was very early on. And so, you know, that'd give you an example of how, you know, how far it's come, because it really wasn't even promoted that much, and that somebody like I wouldn't even know that it was going on. You know, and then the very next year, Duke qualified, and he asked me if he should try to qualify when he was at Tampa one day, and I said, well, I was there. It seemed pretty interesting, and, you know, from there, that point on, we just started going every year.
Your win, because as somebody who now has been broadcasting the contest, I think, 7 years, and your win was, to me, was very interesting, because and you and I talked about it at the time, and it you know, you mentioned that your portion of being a, you know, an advocate for players, of course, and you know, and basically promoting the concept, but the part of it that was, to me, was notable. You know, you and Duke felt like candidates that, you know, you can't look around a room. You know, there's only a handful of NHC regulars that you say, well, they're going to win one at some point. And you know, you and Duke certainly fit that mold. But it also was a very notable public, you know, sort of reveal, because Paul, let's be honest, your family had a mystique about it that you know, that was talked about in hushed tones, the Matisses, and so, you know, you being thrust into the public spotlight on a wide basis was a very interesting dynamic.
Yeah, I guess you know, I'm not sure exactly how that came about, but it is funny. There was some truth to it, because I do remember you know, there it used to be you used to get assigned seats at the NHC. And I remember one year we were out at the Red Rock, or out that when it was out there one year. And I remember one of the players was that I got selected to sit next to. And and he was very very polite. We had a great conversation. We're talking about the races for about, I don't know, a couple hours. And then finally, I told him what my name was. And I asked him first, and then I told him I'm Paul Matisse. And his reaction was really weird. He didn't want to talk to me anymore. And I didn't know what that was all about. It was it was probably the strangest thing that ever happened to me at the NHC. But I don't know what he obviously didn't know me by face. And then when he did, he really acted differently towards me. So. So I know there is a little bit of truth to that. I'm not exactly sure why, but it's pretty funny.
Well, it's because of Saratoga and the pre-internet era, where stories of the family wagering success, and you can't even just say stories. They're more like I don't know if I'm served calling them fables. It's as if Andy Beyer was referencing things that Chick and everybody did at Great Barrington. I mean, it's got the family has that kind of lore attached to it, and it's very funny. I mean, and you and Duke, some of our most fun conversations on at the races, involved some of the some of the hijinks and crazy stories. And there's nothing sinister. I mean, they're I can tell you, Paul, before I got to really be involved, these last 15 years, there was this, this mystique about, about the whole family's involvement in the game. And not that there was anything nefarious, but there's actually it continues to be cultivated by the backyard. The whole scene in the backyard contributes to that.
Yeah, I guess so. It's it's probably just more just horse racing. Being around it a long time, there's always characters, and I'm always. The one thing I have been associated with my whole life is horse racing characters, and I'm thankful for that too. That's been part of my life, and I don't apologize for it. I guess that's part of the thing with horse racing. It's got this you see all the sports betting now, and you're seeing gambling being at the forefront of mainstream society. That was never the case. So it's a little strange for me to watch it all, because as somebody who chose the profession of being a gambler and had to face a lot of backlash, and in our circles, it may be revered, but in general, it took I took a lot for going in that path. And I can remember I can remember a college professor I was taking, who I liked, one of the few I liked, the last year that I was in college, and she says to me, Paul, I'm really worried about your outlook, what you're going to do in life, because I wasn't going to follow the same path of being a professor or something that she had. And I think I told her that I was, going to bet horses. And she wouldn't talk to me anymore. So it was kind of, and it got worse than other things. So, those stigmas were there, in racing. And I actually think it's hurt the projection of racing, That's sure. The one thing that I think that sports betting the fact that it is become more mainstream might help racing. You know, obviously it's a competition for the betting dollar, and that's not the greatest thing. But the fact that it legitimizes some of more of what we do and what regular regular day horse players do on a basically every day or every weekend level, that may help in the long run of things. At least it does give you a little bit of hope, especially when for the last few years, even though handle's up, I'm not thrilled about the way racing's trending right this minute. So hopefully, you know, we need some kind of catalyst or something to get it going back in the right direction.
Well, and on that topic, because both Michael, you know, Michael Bacik, obviously with a very publicized pronouncement in the last 10 days, a couple of them, and I certainly had to let him riff on it and explain his thinking. And you know, David is has had a mercurial relationship, I guess, with the game. I mean, he's he's left the game and come back probably a dozen times, and left the country at least once. So they both expounded. I one thing, Paul, that you can offer on this topic, you know, with you know what is an era where every single complaint and frustration is out there to be gleaned on for public consumption, and every every steward's call that could have gone either way or could have could be seen as a bad call, quote unquote, creates an aura of just outrage. I think would probably benefit. I mean, if you and Chick and Duke, we're having basically lived through decades at this point of horseplay, were to reflect on the fact that those elements that seem to make people incensed right now, those elements have been around forever, and it's not a case of, well, the industry can't get out of its own way. There's going to be things in a gambling game that are going to confound and frustrate no matter how well executed the sport is.
Yeah, I think that's well said. You know, horse racing, as far as the gambling game, is a lot older than all these other ones, and it's been, like I said earlier, there's been a negative light on it in some degree,
yes,
especially from the outside, with the people who don't know it that well, and don't have a concept of what a great game and how it can reach so many different people at so many different levels. That's one thing I love about your show, is that it's not just a handicapping show or it's not just a stakes recap. You know, you really get to go to anybody who's listening today knows that there's a lot of different angles you can come about horse racing, and those are the things that get lost, and it's more this old idea of what it might have been. And actually, more so in racing, the words like degenerate and things like that we've, turned around and used it as our own, like use our a power on it for ourselves.
Sure.
But that's real, It's funny and it's empowering, for the ones that are still, kicking away doing this thing. But, there is that kind of thing that's out there. And racing really did a poor job of not changing that at different turns. you know, and like everybody now wants to blame the people that are in charge now for the problems that were 40, 50 years ago should have been corrected, and they want them to change them now, or even maybe even 25 years ago in some things. And, you know, that then it becomes not fair to the people that are in charge, and it creates this environment like that you were talking about, where everybody has the answers, but nobody can get it done. And then we had a, you know, just like any other sports, we've had some with the evolution of medications and the way we treat people and humans, you know, people and horses. Nobody got any of this stuff right, and we've had this kind of culture where, you know, if it doesn't test, it's okay. It's probably, you know, most of the things that people are using, I'm not including Navarro, but most of the people, what they're using, it's beneficial for the horses for the most part. So, you know, what is a level playing field? And it's all coming to a head, like, right now. And, you know, it's very hard for racing to look good, you know, when it's all done, especially when it's been piled on for things that haven't been fixed for years. But, you know, I do think that the people in charge, because I have been privy to some of the conversations, are much more aware of the issues than, first of all, than they've ever been, and much more aware than the public believes. So I do have some hope that we can get things turned around and get horse racing going back in the right direction. Because I think as somebody who you know, got absorbed into it, the more you're around racing, you realize how great it is.
Exactly. No, well said. And, you know, you actually hit on the much broader issue involved in the hearing going on with Naira and Bob Baffert. And what I would recommend everybody do, instead of taking, you know, Twitter couplets and little, you know, little dribs and drabs, read Matt Hegarty's two pieces from yesterday and from Monday, and, you know, read them in succession, and they're extensive. And they, you know, very carefully highlight the, you know, the most, frankly, interesting parts of the discussion. And if there was there's really no way to know where this thing ultimately shakes out. But yesterday, the woman that talked about, you know, social license, you just touched on it, you know, tangentially. Clark Brewster was asking her about the way the public conflates therapeutic medication overages, which are in most cases, you know, generally completely innocuous, versus authentic attempts to, you know, to influence horse performance. And this is something, Paul, I mean, you're a long-term listener. This is something we've tried to drive home for forever. And, you know, had the RMTC conversations for years, you know, trying to help people understand, you know, the difference between, you know, therapeutic meds that anybody that is an athlete would take for, you know, for any muscle soreness and for minor inflammation, versus, you know, things that are, you know, coming out of, you know, black bottles, unmarked bottles in the, you know, in somebody's trunk. There's a lot going on in this that's on display, including the jurisdiction elements that both Craig Robertson and Clark Brewster are you know, driving home, that you know, the New York Gaming Commission witness and basically, you know, displaying that a number of the violations that that they're talking about and utilizing against Baffert are things that wouldn't have even been violations in New York. And so it's a very, very thorny series of topics that really, to me, is a cross section of everything that, you know, people that are, if they're voicing frustrations, it's all, you know, it's all kind of on display there. And I mean, it's
an argument that that you could make. We could talk about this forever, but the big problem to me was that withdrawal times, and what you're getting at, create the culture where that if it passes, it's legal. If it passes the test, it's legal. And that's not what it was set up to be, and that's not what you're talking about, and that's not what they're talking about. Yes. In this trial and these other things, you know, and what that does over time, it leads to be, well, that's the unwritten rule, you know. If it passes, then you're not doing anything wrong, and that's the way everybody in racing, I shouldn't say everybody, but that's the great majority of how racing evolved. And what happens is, when that is the way it's set up, well, then on the other hand, when you see this other trial that's going on at the same time, then people like that evolve into it, all right, and they come about.
Right.
And that's where there is no line, there is nobody in charge, there's nobody seeing what's going on with this problem and tackling it, and not. And I'm sure that there's been warnings. There's been trainers that have come along and said, there's been lots of horse players that have said, we know something's going on. Whether one of the things I've been saying, even before the day the Juice died and when all these things happened a couple of years ago, you know, I said, I don't know if it's legal medications or if it's illegal medications. You can't tell the difference. You know, how can we know the difference? I was ahead of the curve almost on this argument yesterday, in the point that you're making, that it's impossible for anybody to. The line had just gotten too blurred for anybody to make a distinction, and that became, you know, it got overblown here in the last few years, and to me, I guess the fact that it's come to head and there has to be decisions made. I would be disappointed, though, if the idea was to go back to what you're referring to, where everything has to be on a time scale of withdrawal times, and that's the way it's looked upon. I'm hoping it doesn't. I hope that we get a clean slate, the players, the trainers, the people know what the rules are, get an education of what's good for the horse. I'm going to give you an example of the horse players that's a little bit different, but just how it throws chaos. You know, the way the LASIK rules are, you know, for the last month, you know, there's been series of races where every horse is first-time LASIKs. And you can just put your head in the sand and say, well, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't have any impact on the races. But anybody who's been around a horse or has watched the race knows that first-time LASIKs will affect the horse, every horse, differently. So we're trying to handicap races and try to predict how a horse is going to perform when every single horse has this variable, and it's not a constant. It's going to affect all the horses differently. And that's a tall order. And, you know, I've had big trouble in the last month or so, even betting races. you know, betting multi-leg races, because I've been just not wanting to participate in those races. And then and the ones I have, you know, maybe I was lucky, maybe I was unlucky, but one horses will jump up and beat you, and you know, there's no explanation except maybe it was the Lasix, you know. And then throw into the fact, you know, that maybe it was something else that I missed. And I want to just throw it off as, you know, it was first time Lasix, when it could have been something, you know, that I might have been able to see, you know. And so it's my point is that it's tricky that a level playing field and having tighter rules and having these different rules doesn't necessarily make a better betting product either. You have to take that into effect, and that's one thing that maybe some of the horse players can point out in the future, that you know, yes, we want the best for all the horses. We want to have a as much of an even playing field as we can for the owners and trainers, but you know, you have to have it so that it still is a betting game, and you don't still want to throw it into chaos, you know, of not knowing what's going on. So, you know, like we said before, it's a great game, but it's a very complicated game, and people come out at a different level, different perspectives.
No doubt. And there's, you look at what's gone on, fold in, you know, the new Tapeta course at Gulfstream, and, you know, having to, you know, kind of reorient to, you know, to the race dynamics there, and you know, to the way in which the training community is dealing with it. You know, not to mention the surface switches. You know, now when the races come off, you got a whole different you know, the equation of races coming off turf and going to either a muddy or potentially a dry, fast track sometimes down in Florida, because it's so crazy the way the weather is. Now you got this third surface to try to, you know, to try to add in. And, you know, when you talk about multis, I mean, how does that not, you know, negatively
great
impact
example, you know,
the approach?
Great example. I see the pluses of it. I see that it's better for racing and probably overall to have this third surface there, but it hasn't been better for betting it. It's certainly not now. I do think that maybe that will change in the upcoming, you know, as more horses run over it and as the trainers get more used to, you know, the moves and how they might go about running the horses on the different surfaces. Maybe it'll get to be a better betting product but I probably not. You know, I mean, as little Andy has said a bunch of times, and I've said too, you know, a lot of times when those races come off the turf and they run on the dirt, they're some of my bigger handle days.
Absolutely.
You know, I like playing those situations. So, you know, it's just different. We're in transition for sure. And, you know, I'm just hoping for the best that on the other side, that I have a little bit different outlook than the two guys you had on yesterday. You know, I don't want to, you know, I understand their points, but, you know, I'm willing to go slower and take it easier for a little while, and if it's for the greater good of the game.
Yeah, that's why I'm a little I'll talk to Michael Paycheck when we see him face to face. That's why I'm a little surprised by you know, that the way in which he's responded to this, because it I mean, if you're as dedicated and as certainly as he's been, you know, that you do what you can and you voice, you know, if you have any, you know, any potential to impact things, you know, which guys like you and he and David and you know, anybody in this, you know, in the horse player landscape, you know, that is looked to for either inspiration or for, you know, for direction, you know, you dig your heels in and you make your opinion known. you know,
it's a tough thing, though. I understand it because, you know, it's your betting dollar, and you know that's one of the things I'm worried about with the computer players as well in this whole thing. That, you know, it's easier to take all the hassles and the and the troubles of when you're winning. You know, when it becomes tougher to win, and you have to work harder to compete, and you don't have the opportunities that you as the betting opportunities of winning and celebrating and all the great things that racing can give to you. If you're having less of those, and it's harder to accomplish some of those things, it's easier to bow out. You know, it's easier to say, well, you know, I'm just not going to fight this anymore. I feel like, as like I said before, we're in a transition, and I think we're probably in a transition for players like that too. You know, it's a lot easier when, you know, when the takeout's lower and the you're not competing against, you know, computers and you're odds dropped at the last minute, and you know there's a lot of things going on in racing now, and it's just making it harder. And I think that, you know, and what's going on with society too right now, you know, it's easy to bow out. It's easy to take that route. And, you know, I can't blame anybody who does that. You know, I understand it, I should say. But
I understand it, but I don't know. As I said to Michael yesterday, I don't.
Like Michael, where racing has been so good to him, you know, that's kind of where I come from, you know. Without racing, my life would have been a lot lesser. And,
nice.
You know, when you nice. Have awards like this, you think back about your life a lot. And I don't know. There's no way. I just don't even know where I would have been without horse racing. So for me to turn my back on it, I just would goes against, you know, kind of what it goes against all that to me. So, you know, that's kind of where I'm at.
Well. To kind of tie it all together, and to include the reference to the aura, the mystique of the Matisses, it sort of has a bit of a Hyman Roth feel to it. This is the life we've chosen. I didn't ask. It was born into it.
Well, maybe those guys will give them the other line later when they thought I was out.
There you go.
Pull them back in.
Perfect, Paul. I know you got a conference here at 10. Delighted for you, and it's about as incredible a quintet of contest players and people that love the game as could possibly be assembled. And going to miss you here this week, but we'll certainly have Matisse representation here in the event center.
Yeah, thanks, Steve.
Paul Matisse, everybody, and you follow Paul on Twitter, Paul Matisse Jr. We'll take a break here, top of the hour. The tables are now all set. The tables have been distributed already by here by what? 7 o'clock in the morning, and now they'll start to put the electricity to them, so everybody's laptop and phones are able to operate. It's fun. It is fun to be here in these 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Spats, you know, during the lead up and watching the room come together. And then it's a little sad on Monday when we do the recap before leaving, when the whole thing is you know, being broken down and it disappears. And by the way, Keith Chamberlain was not kidding. It literally is a drive-in movie screen at the front of the ballroom that is unbelievable. Keith said they're still trying to figure out how to, you know, what they're going to do with it. If they'll chop it up into like quadrants or what. But it is Yeah, it's like a drive-in theater.
Sid Fernando is going to join us. Sire Watch Pedigree Folk is brought to you by Hill and Dale. And could have certainly let Sid put Leslie's Lady into perspective. And there's more, too, that we can do with Sid, of course. I've got to talk about the LeCompte winner, as we do on the road and to the classic season. Sid joins us next. Dick Powell. We'll get to Dick. We didn't get a chance to do any morning action but at Hong Kong. But we'll check in with Dick as well. And then Keith at 11 for the Eclipse Award of Merit announcement. Seth Merrow and I hope Stanley Bavlish to close out our four congratulatory Hall of Fame conversations. Thanks to Paul Matisse for that. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horseville.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? The University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Sirius XM Sports presents...
I'm on my radio show.
At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, coming to you from Vegas and the event center at Bally's that by tomorrow afternoon will be filled with horse players, probably 200-300, looks like, tracking. $500 buy-in tomorrow for the last chance, first chance. Right now, reach down to Tampa and have Sid Fernando join us. Sire Watch Pedigree Folk is brought to you by Hill and Dale. Sid, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
Sid, there's a hatful of topics I could come at you with, and that includes, you know, the proverbial rip from today's headlines. Maybe we'll circle back to that. Maybe let's do our pedigree focus conversation first, and then I want to talk to you a little bit about what's going on in New York with this hearing. I had Ned Toffee yesterday. I don't know if you had a chance to hear, but I certainly wanted to, you know, get an immediate reaction to the passing of Leslie's Lady. And you know, the more you think about it, Sid, the more amazing her success as a broodmare is going to be. And she's going to go down alongside, you know, the Tussauds of history and the like. I mean, the influence is going to be profound, and it's actually as big as it is so far with Into Mischief. There's no telling. It's literally an iceberg kind of a legacy already. The tip is showing, and 90% of it is to come.
Yeah, I mean, just an iconic mare. Mentioned Into Mischief and how he's become, you know, one of the top, if not the top stallion right now in this country. But for Spendthrift, they also had her champion daughter, Beholder. And, of course, she's just beginning her career as broodmare. And then on top of that, you have Mendelssohn, right? So, and he's just starting his stud career. You know, you've got other horses to come as well. So it's just a extremely profound influence, and the way it's kind of just all generated, really, from her success. And we've spoken about this before, but what's really amazing with her is just the success she's had as a broodmare in combination with Stormcat Line stallions. Mendelssohn by Scat Daddy, Stormcat Line, Beholder, Stormcat Line, Into Mischief, Stormcat Line, her two-year-old filly, the last one by Not This Time, Stormcat Line. And so this combination of this family with the Stormcat Line has really been hugely pivotal. And, of course, she suffered a major loss with her American Pharaoh, who was, you know, one of the highest-priced yearling of her year, who died on the verge of making her
right.
racetrack career.
That's right.
So even with that, you know, it's just a phenomenal record, and anybody, you know, you're right. Just, you know, you can compare her to all the great broodmares that have come down the line.
When you look at her, and I got to pull it back up from yesterday, really, you know, I appreciated Ned, you know, joining us, and I do not know Fred Mitchell, and have not had the privilege, but
I don't either.
Yeah, Clarkland.
Yeah,
but it I did say to Ned yesterday that some of the things we talked about just in the last 2 weeks, Sid, about modest investment,
right.
You know, and you know, obviously Clarkland and the Mitchells, you know, operate commercially, but they didn't spend a fortune, you know, buying her. You know, last week we talked about the mayor we were talking about last week was a $16,000 purchase. Let me go back to where is that from yesterday, because I did bring it up with I did bring it up with Ned about her, you know, her pedigree, which itself was, you know, fairly mundane, right? A Tricky Creek, a near Arctic line, ice capade, clever trick, Tricky Creek, out of a Stop the Music mare. I suppose that Seabird, in the female, you know, family, Last Bird, the third dam of Leslie's Lady, probably is of note. But, you know, it's not one of those pages that, it was gonna stop you cold.
No, and you have to go further back, like you said, to where you mentioned Last Bird, which is the Seabird mare. That's a great family going. When you go, that, you know, it's a great. The sires, as you mentioned, aren't that great up front, but the depth of the family is when you get back further back, as you pointed out. Last Bird, there's a Thomas Mellon Evans, Ned Evans family, Next Dan Paitlin. Those are all extremely, extremely top mares. But then, you know, she made, it's going to tie in, actually, when we talk about the Midnight Lute horse who just won the other day. But, you know, you get a really good family further back, but what's happened with Leslie's Lady was closer up, she's by Tricky Creek, who's really just a footnote now, you know. And her dam was by Stop the Music. Neither Tricky Creek nor Stop the Music today are, you know, significant at all. The sire of the Next Dam is One For All. That's One Last Bird. You know, another Thomas Mellon Evans bred mare. So you've got this really strong Thomas Mellon Evans family, Buckland Farm, really strong behind. It went into a little blue-collar progression with Crystal Lady, who is by Stop the Music, and then that mare was bred to Tricky Creek, and that's what produced Leslie's Lady. But then, Steve, she made her own, an entirely new page with a champion mare and a champion stallion, which is really phenomenal. I mean, just to get one or the other would qualify as exemplary. She got both. And on top of which, she's also got Mendelsohn, you know. So it's a really incredible story. And as you pointed out, Clarkland only paid $100,000 for her.
Right.
And, you know, that was quite a... investment. I should also point out that Leslie's Lady was bred by David Hager the second in Kentucky, and you know, more of a blue collar breeder too, so it makes sense how he shaped her pedigree closer up with the Tricky Creek and the Stop the Music. By the way, Tricky Creek and Stop the Music, although they're not really known in pedigrees now, known as very, very sires and racehorses, you know, hard-hitting horses. That line, Tricky Creek by Clever Trick by Ice Capade, was known as a very, very strong, stout line of horses that withstood a lot of training, and, you know, maybe they weren't shimmering lights, but they were certainly rock solid foundations. And the same could be said for Stop the Music. Stop the Music, Green Tree Stud Horse. I used to watch him race all the time because he ran against Forgo in New York. His half brother was Hatchet Man. And wrote Hatchet Man and stopped the music, you know, went to Studded Green Tree. And, you know, again, real tough horses. So there was a tough blue-collar foundation to her up front. And further back, you had that Ned Evans family. And think about it, the Ned Evans line, Ned Evans is responsible for the families of horses like Quality Road and Stud, Terrific Stallion, and more recently Gunrunner. So that's, you know, his imprimatur on a pedigree is pretty significant.
There's a theme, and of course we hit on these themes so often, Sid, whether it's, you know, whether it's horses that are particularly prominent from a pedigree standpoint, or whether they, you know, they have circled around to prominence through, as you identify, you know, kind of a blue collar track. However, there's one part of this that is really notable, and that's Tricky Creek's female family, which has got the stamp of Galbraith and Darby Dan on it in North America for the last, let's say, 50 years. And then I see a name that jumps off the page that goes back to the Khans, to Ali Khan, and yeah, to the Aga Khan breeding program. So you've got all the greats that, you know, who dedicated their interest in equine, you know, heritage, contributing. And you've said it before, and all pedigree people discuss, you know, the ability of, you know, of the equine to plug in, you know, when certain elements go into the beaker, that just come, you know, forcing themselves out. And I, you know, I said this, I think, on Monday in anticipation of your visit, you know, which is people's rush to judgment on stallions, always worried about their sons, and you know, failing to appreciate that, you know, the equine heritage, the horses themselves, and their makeup and their genes, they know best. And yeah, if there's a stallion who is going to reinforce and strengthen the female side of pedigrees,
Hello? Steve? Steve, can you hear me?
Sid, it looks like we lost our connection to Steve. I'm going to send it to break. If you can just stand by for a little bit, okay?
Okay, sure.
All right.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them, is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.